This is a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. Go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
And a very warm welcome back to Solidarity Breakfast.
A left response to the major developments in capitalism.
What they trade in is not wheat. They trade in famine.
A little dose of revolutionary optimism.
I think it's really important to sort of express solidarity globally.
It really is a deal by corporations for corporations.
The union forever defending our rights. Down with the black leg.
If you think the ABC's left wing, don't listen to this program.
Solidarity Breakfast, 7:30 to 9 a.m. Saturdays, 3CR, 8:55 a.m. Streaming and 3CR digital, podcast or audio on demand. And of course, the website, solidaritybreakfast.org.au.
Solidarity forever!
Good morning, this is Annie and...
me, Tobia.
on Solidarity Breakfast here on 3CR, your community radio station. And this Saturday morning, it's really is beginning to feel like spring is in the air. But over in the world, there seems to be this need to take us towards destruction. We're now seeing America showing its full rogue state uniform. It's quite weird that some of the things that have been happening over the last week.
It's a period of naked power.
Yeah, it is.
With the coast of Venezuela being under attack.
Yeah, this is a fascinating piece of attack. I mean, I don't know if it's mainly related to the fact that Trump would really like people to forget that his connection to Epstein or what. But
I mean, also important to remember that Venezuela is up there in the countries that has some of the biggest oil supply.
Yeah.
That's been routinely sanctioned by America. So they are actually not a producer. Like, they don't have any refinery, but they have massive wells.
Yeah, that's right. They do. And I suppose if you look at America, it is actually only interested in business and profit. So I suppose that their sense of they've thrown diplomacy out of the window. But what we're talking about here is the attack on a speedboat, a US military strike on a boat in the Caribbean Sea, which Donald Trump gleefully showed on his Truth Socials on September the 2nd, showing a US military strike on a boat, killing all the people on board and talking about it as a lethal strike that was apparently because it was part of a drug cartel, and that is a security issue to America. But, of course, this was 2,000 miles away and they're using lethal force, using the US Army and involving nobody, none of the Congress groupings that are around.
Truly an extrajudicial killing.
Yeah, it's an extrajudicial killing. Murder. It's murder. It's called murder. And Senator Rand Paul, who is a Republican, took aim at the Trump administration for glorifying the killing of people without trial, saying the lethal strike was a breach of long accepted rules of engagement. He also disclosed that it was a drone strike. In fact, that the Pentagon and Secretary of War Peter Hegseth has refused to reveal. This was part of a report out of
I mean, I'd just like to make the point, though, as well, that renaming the Department of Defense to the Department of War is a clear indication of the kind of policies that the Trump government will be likely continue to pursuing into the future, as well as the egomaniac that is now the Secretary of War, Pete Hegseth, who is not the most stable man, let's say, in his masculinity,
well,
or in his entire identity.
Well, of course, this is why we reference this whole thing as, I mean, that was a report from Intercept, which is a very interesting online newspaper coming out of America, worth keeping an eye on. we're underlying the fact that America is actually acting like a rogue state. And one of the things that was really a standout over this time has been the attack by the Israelis on Doha, the capital of Qatar. Now, you've got to remember that Qatar is actually a paid-up member of the US fan club. So here we have this...
hosts the one of the largest bases in the Gulf.
Yeah, that's American bases.
American base, yep.
Yeah. So Israel carried out an airstrike on the Qatari capital on Tuesday, and in an effort to kill the Hamas negotiators that are apparently part of the so-called peace deal that's supposed to be going on between...
Which is important to notice that it's also brokered by the US. The US has put its weight behind this peace deal, and supposedly Israel has thrown that all to the wind. And
The US can't be trusted. All factions of the Israeli political establishment endorsed the attack. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu boasted about it, saying, "At the beginning of the war, I promised that Israel would reach those who perpetrated that horror. Today, that was done." Now, these people were actually meeting to discuss the peace deal that had been put to them by the Americans. And so they were then targeted by the Israelis, and this is supposed to be a good thing. People should be very frightened by this concept of, they talk about, you know, international law, the world, you know, the idea of international law, but these people are pissing on it, basically.
Well, 7 countries in 2 years, that this is what who Israel have attacked, 7 different countries in 2 years they've bombed. I'm not sure that there is a comparable country in recent history that isn't the United States that has done actions like that.
Well, it's interesting you should say that. Someone I knew went through the American experience since the Monroe Doctrine was, which is the basis of America's belief that it should have an imperialist approach to the rest of the world. And that's from the 18, it's very early, right? It's quite early in its establishment as a state, Monroe being the president at the time, that ever since that was in place, America has had a war with another country. Has been in continuous war. It has wars in Latin America, in South America, in other places. And if they miss out a year, they have 2 the next.
Mm.
I mean, that's how committed they are to using war as a methodology of suppressing and building business relationships.
Well, we live in the world that, I mean, here it's quite alarming. We talked about it on the PhilF program, the difference in teaching about Nagasaki and Hiroshima is that a lot of people in the Anglophone West will still probably believe and have teachers tell them that it was necessary for America to bomb Japan in order to...
I know, when they had actually already surrendered. I know, I found that really shocking. I read that over years, you know, you collect details, and I read that and I was truly shocked when I realised what they were doing was they needed to experiment. It's exactly the same as what Lowenstein was saying about using Palestine as a weapons
testing
ground. The Americans really wanted to know what would happen.
Yeah, and also it goes in, they've had a shock and awe doctrine since, so... And we've seen that replicated with the bombing of Iran this year.
Yeah, no, it's absolutely disgraceful.
The raising of the bar of atrocity in order to keep everyone else at bay to say, this is what we'll do to you if you step out of line. But I mean, in more internal, not to make it completely an American program, but we are definitely witnessing the unraveling of the internal schizophrenia.
Yeah, exactly.
The United States project with the assassination of Charlie, right-wing pundit Charlie Kirk.
Yes.
Who's famous for going around universities and engaging in campaigns trying to...
Being the groovy guy.
Yeah, to appeal to uni students to bring them further right and to disincentivize them in engaging in any sort of mildly radical politics.
Well, one of the things that he was proselytizing around was that it was, you know, having a few gun deaths is okay because... It was acceptable because to defend our freedom, whatever that freedom is.
Second Amendment, right, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and which,
Yeah, it's poetic in maybe a really bloody way.
Ironic way.
Yeah, that the last words that exited his mouth were violence. Before he got shot in the neck, as he was addressing the question that was put to him.
Extraordinary. Doug Cameron, who was the who was a New South Wales left Labor senator, gave the most recent Laurie Carmichael address that was on Wednesday last week, and it was put on in as a partnership between the Australia Institute and the Laurie Carmichael, I don't know what they call themselves. It's a group. It's I don't know what that's called. But anyway, it's fascinating because he gave this speech, and this was reported in The Conversation by Michelle Grattan. This is what she wrote. Former Senator, Labor Senator Doug Cameron has accused the Albanese government and its left faction in particular of deserting principle and abandoning Australian sovereignty to the United States. This is where it links, of course. Delivering the Carmichael lecture in Melbourne on Wednesday night, Cameron declared the parliamentary left had allowed themselves to be defanged and co-opted into supporting US military aggression. Condemning the passivity of today's caucus left, he contrasted the faction's assertiveness in the 1980s when it pushed back successfully against the Hawke government over proposed US missile testing near Australia. While the parliamentary Labor Party remains almost totally factionalised, the backbench under the Albanese government hardly ever challenges the executive. The dramatic exception was Western Australian Senator Fatima Payman, who last term left the party over Palestine, was kicked out. Cameron said AUKUS and the force posture agreement, which covers the US's military presence in Australia, reduced Australia's sovereignty and boosted the likelihood Australia would be dragged into a war with China over Taiwan. I never thought the day of Chifley, Evatt, Whitlam, Keating, Crean, Uren, Cairns, Murphy and Evans would abandon our sovereignty to the United States, Cameron said. He was bewildered that Labor, with its massive majority, would resort to word games about having undertaken a serious review of AUKUS and why so many of my former colleagues have been muted, intimidated and acquiesce. Why have the ministers who once marched shoulder to shoulder with Tom Uren at Palm Sunday peace marches abandoned their principles, Cameron asked. Why has the left caucus failed to uphold its historic role for peace? Why are they missing in action on AUKUS, Palestine and US support for Netanyahu? Why has the left caucus failed to support Keating, Carr, Evans and even Liberal Prime Minister, former Liberal Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull in their support opposition to AUKUS? Cameron accused the left of being deaf to the ever-increasing evidence that AUKUS and the force posture agreement weren't in Australia's interest and increased the potential for nuclear war. He said caucus solidarity must never come before opposition to war, genocide and starvation of innocent civilians in Gaza.
I think they must have forgot that. And especially interesting to note, even the implication of a forced posture is what is forcing that posture,
yes.
Especially when the United States regime drops five of the biggest bombs it's ever dropped on the earth on Iran. It supplies the genocidal regime of Netanyahu and Israel. It's important to see what is forcing that posture to increasingly more craven politicians.
Well, it's funny, you know, because they're incredibly, vindictive. There was a really interesting little article coming out of the Sydney lawyers.
They do excellent work.
They do fantastic work. And it's about an Australian citizen, Dan Duggan, appears before the Federal Court of Australia next month to argue against his extradition to the United States based on the assertion of a 2017 District Court of Columbia grand jury indictment and no clear evidence. The father of six Australian children will have been remanded for 3 years by the Australian government without any prospect of bail. This is what he was a former US military fighter pilot who, after 12 years in the US Marines, migrated to Australia in 2002, married his wife and had kids. He became a citizen in 2012 and relinquished his US citizenship at the time. This is also the same year that he worked for some months at the Test Flying Academy of South Africa as a flight instructor with three other Australians. The US Department of Justice then secretly produced the indictment against Duggan, charging him with conspiring with other ex-military pilots from the West to provide US defence services in the form of flight training to Chinese military personnel in violation of a US international traffic in arms regulations embargo, despite his asserting it involved Chinese citizens and not military training. Isn't this the most bizarre piece of footwork and vindictiveness coming from the US state?
Yeah, I mean, next to...
And kowtowing, because our Attorney General says, I can't do anything about it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we're going to have to play the song Cops of the World by Phil Oakes at this point. We almost can't not.
You're on Solidarity Breakfast with Annie and Tobiah, and you're on 3CR.
We're the cops of the world. Pick and choose as we please, boy. Pick and choose as we please. You'd best get down on your knees, boy. Best get down on your knees. We're hairy and horny and ready to shack, and we don't care if you're yellow or black. Just take off your clothes and lay down on your back. You'd better wipe off that smile, boy. Better wipe off that smile. We'll spit through the streets of the cities we wreck, and we'll find you a leader that you can elect. Those treaties we signed remain in the net. Johns with a rag. If you like, you can use your flag, boys. If you like, you can use your flag. We've got too much money, we're looking for toys, and guns will be guns, and boys will be boys, but we'll gladly pay for all we destroy. The biggest and the toughest kids on the block, and we're the cops of the world, boy. We're the cops of the world. And when we butcher
sons, boys, when we butchered your sons. Have a stick of our gum, boys, have a stick of our bubble gum. We own half the world, oh say can you see, and the name for our profits is democracy. So like it or not, you will have to be free. 'Cause we're the cops of the world, boys. We're the cops of the world.
Hi, we're from Fitzroy Primary School and you're listening to Community Radio on 3CR.
So I'm down at the State Library and it's the 10th of September and people have stopped work for Palestine. There's a lot of people here actually, and they're not just all cops. There's people who are from the NTU, the ASU, the Services Union. There's a person from the CFMEU that I've come across. There's other unions as well. They've come in support of the people from Palestine. It's a national or an international call for action.
Yeah, well, we know that Palestinian trade unions put the call out for people to take strike action. And that's, you know, maybe easier said than done just because of the low levels of militant strike activity around the world at the moment. But yeah, this is an effort to at least move that in the right direction, even if it's a small action and it's restricted to just one section of the workforce.
It was funny because Josh Lees, who's a leading advocate in Sydney, was targeted by right-wing groups on social media. And one of the profiles was that this is a dole bludger. In actual fact, this is showing that actually it's not just dole bludgers who actually care about human life.
Yes, and I know for a fact Josh Lees works as well. But yeah, I mean, working class people, you know, we don't have anything to gain from the senseless slaughter of other working class people, you know, and if we're unionists and we're engaged day to day in trying to improve our working lives, and so we actually think about these issues and we need to broaden that out, and in fact I think we do broaden it out to care about our working class brothers and sisters as a whole, and that doesn't just end at our national borders. People absolutely care. The people who come to these huge rallies every Sunday are working class people by and large, you know, and so for us to be organised as unionists expressing that is even more powerful, and that's the next step that we're hoping to push things in the direction of.
A lot of the members are ASU members who started, who have been actually proselytising for this, mainly from the community legal centres who work in this area of human rights on a continuous basis.
Yeah, look, lawyers get a really bad rap, and I think rightly so, but community lawyers are a bit different in that we're not paid very well and we do the work out of a love for it usually. We work with a lot of people from disadvantaged backgrounds, a lot of people who've experienced trauma in their lives, who are refugees and so forth. You know, and I think all of us have, we're engaged and looking at what's going on in the world, and we also know to see through the crap that we're fed from mainstream media and the government. So I think that puts us at an advantage in terms of being able to get on the same page, you know, ideas-wise about, like, this is these are atrocities. We know also a little bit about international law and the totally egregious violations of it. And so what better group of workers to stand up and try and lead this than us, because, you know, we're extremely passionate about it and most of us agree.
Thanks very much.
You're welcome.
Can I talk to you guys? I'm from 3CR.
Yeah. And have our world spinning when others continue to suffer. So it's important to show that government in action doesn't represent the majority opinion.
This is a different kind of action though, because it's stopping work. And I suppose it's saying that the people in Palestine, in fact all the unions in Palestine called for action right at the beginning of this and called for the workers of the world to unite effectively, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It's really important to show that, yeah, absolutely, like, taking time off work is really crucial to show that we won't stand for it.
I mean, nothing else is working at the moment. Like, we're protesting, you know, weekly, doing the rallies. There's been so many things. People have been injured protesting this matter in Australia, and that's still not enough to get the government to take any action in the face of these horrible atrocities. And a lot of us are lawyers, we work in human rights. It wouldn't make sense for us to keep business as usual when this is happening, a genocide is happening on the other side of the world.
One of the things that they continue to do is imply that the people who are protesting in support of Palestine are the rabble, when in actual fact, by standing here as workers, you're actually saying that, in fact, it's normal people who are saying that this is a problem.
It's highly patronising to call people the rabble, but I guess that's what mainstream media is there to do, which is to other us, and the fact that actually a lot of people from all walks of life actually really do care about human rights and the dignity of the people in Gaza.
From 3CR, and I'm wondering why you thought it was important to stop work for Palestine today.
I think it's really important that working people and unionists stop work for Palestine, because we need to let people in government know that we are serious and that we stand in solidarity with the people who are being massacred. And we, in my family, believe that this is a genocide, and some of the people that we know in our friendship circle suffered terrible hardship and were ethnically cleansed in Srebrenica, so we are taking this seriously.
I'm an organiser with the Australian Services Union. I'm down here to support ASU members and others who are rallying here to say no to the genocide in Gaza.
So it's authorised?
Yeah.
By the union?
The rally is authorised by the union, yeah. The rally was authorised, it was promoted by the union. The strike action, the union hasn't put forward a support of the strike action, just because of the really repressive labour laws that we have in this country that target workers' rights to withdraw their labour. And so, no, the ASU hasn't supported the strike action purely because of the risks to workers and to the union branch, if that were to happen.
So you're doing a welfare check, really, aren't you?
I am, yeah. I'm here checking in, seeing how our members are going, but also standing with our members who are calling for an end to the genocide.
Thanks very much.
Yeah, thank you. In by midday
yesterday, but support, striking workers for Palestine. Try to get our government to actually do something eventually, and hopefully to encourage other members of other unions to do the same thing. And yeah, it's the only way to kind of get any action.
I was wondering, could you tell me why you're here today? Why it's important?
My name is Matega. I'm a member of the Red Anti-Imperialist Collective, and I'm also a member of the ASU. And I am here to stand with the people of Palestine, to stand against imperialism and the genocide and exploitation of the third world in general, because we cannot build a more just society for all of us without justice for the most oppressed. And that doesn't just mean in our society, that means in the world as a whole. So when a genocide is happening in other parts of the world, if we don't stand up against it, we are not going to be safe from it.
G'day, you're from the Plumbers Union. Fantastic. Do you tell me why you're here?
I'm here because Palestine is union business, and it's incumbent on every single worker to be able to stand up for all oppressed peoples. And that means sometimes putting down tools and coming out and supporting the people in Palestine by doing one of our most basic rights that we have, and that is to stop work at any given time. So well done to all of the people that have gone out on strike here. Applaud it. There should be a hell of a lot more of it, including in the construction industry.
Thanks, mate. I'm from 3CR. Do you want to tell me why you're here today?
I'm here as a worker, as a trade unionist, to support the people of Palestine.
Are you surprised at how many people have turned up? Because it's 1 o'clock, they will call down tools. These are working people. There's people from the nurses and midwives union. There's people from a whole range of different unions here.
No, I'm not surprised. I kind of am, but there needs to be more of this. People, unionists, who are unafraid of taking industrial action, which is...
Well, it's illegal here, unless it's unprotected.
Unprotected industrial action. But when I came out the Melbourne Central Station, I saw a few people standing up in front of the library. I thought, this isn't looking good. But in 20 minutes, it's just swelled. It's a really good turnout, and I'm proud to be here.
Thanks, mate.
My name's Louisa. I'm a rank and file member of the ASU and a community lawyer at Inner Melbourne Community Legal. We're gathered and protesting here today on the lands of the Bunurong, Boon Wurrung and Wurundjeri Woi Wurrung people of the Kulin Nations. This is land that was stolen from its custodians and they were subject to a genocide. I pay my respect to elders past and present, any First Nations people here today, and acknowledge their resilience and determination in the ongoing struggle for treaty and justice. This is a wonderful crowd, really inspiring. Can I see, with a show of hands, how many people walked out from work today? That's so wonderful. It's really amazing. We're here today as workers, as unionists who usually come together in that capacity to improve our pay and conditions. Indeed, we're legally only allowed under the Fair Work Act to strike for those things. But pay and conditions is about how we live, about how much free time we have, about how stressed we get over money. Did you tighten this? There are concerns that any single one of us with a sense of humanity extends to our families, our communities, people who we live with, and that doesn't just stop at our national borders. And as we witness a genocide, the sheer agony of the Palestinian people, we must question how we as workers can use our industrial power to stop the Israeli and US war machine. Whether Palestinians live freely and live beautifully as they deserve to is union business. I know many of us are having our pay docked and putting ourselves at risk of fines today, but what a tiny price to pay to bring to life this expression of working class solidarity from Naam to Palestine.
Per global sumut flottiglia. Voce che spezza il silenzio da tempo che va. Free, free Palestine. Arriva protta dal fondo, sulle onde del mare. Da ogni parte del mondo, con voglio di pace. Porta voce e supporto chi muore ogni giorno. Fra piogge di piombo e le bombe su Gaza. Salveranno da terre, paesi lontani. Sono più che le stelle sui cieli Gazawi. Ora unite le forme, le forze, la flotta si scontra col vento del mondo che tace. Ma è la flotta più grande che la storia conosca. Luci mare nel buio, una galassia nascosta. Israele una morsa, reso Gaza una gabbia. Ad ogni bomba che importa sogna la nuova Nakba. E sono quante le stelle, tutte le navi dal mondo. Se converge l'incombo ora per rompere il blocco. Mentre l'alba su Gaza piange la sua città. Saranno quante le stelle, da ogni parte del mondo. Se converge l'incombo ora col cuore a babordo. Oggi a Gaza e domani tutta l'umanità. E l'Occidente ora tace perché complice attivo. Chiama non divisivo tutto il suo servilismo. Dice guerra ai confini ma non colonialismo. Dice lungo conflitto invece che genocidio. Chiede pace fra parti ma non cambierà mai. Chiude gli occhi sui campi, stragi, spari, apartheid. L'Occidente negli highlights si pente ma mente. Mentre vende le armi piange sulle macerie. Ma una voce che rompe il silenzio ora un nuovo sentiero. Viaggia forte, rincorre una rotta nel vento che fa. Free, free Palestine. Prova a far differenza, Gaza in tutta la striscia. Perché l'indifferenza non sia più il paradigma. Viene da tutto il globo, dopo miglia su miglia. Sostiene anche tu, Global Summit Flottiglia. E siamo con delle stelle, tutte le navi dal mondo. Se converge l'incombo ora per rompere il blocco. Mentre l'alba su Gaza piange la sua città. Saranno quante le stelle, parte del mondo. A converge l'incombo ora col cuore a babordo. Oggi a Gaza e domani tutta l'umanità. Ma tutta la realtà sua è fatta, guarda età. La banalità del male di Anna A. Una moralità più umana salpa in mano. Non c'è silenzio, silenzio, ogni silenzio è neutrale. Non tornerà mai l'ultima voce di Aman che filmava la striscia devastata dai tank. Non
suonerà il rap nelle strofe di Swap, che cantava giustizia né Israele né Hamas. Ogni potente sta muto, loop di mille silenzi, che diremo in futuro a tutti i figli e i superstiti. Che ora vaga nel fumo sotto i bombardamenti, ma che ora scappa nel buio in fuga dagli F-16. E sono quante le stelle, tutte le navi dal mondo, in combora per rompere il blocco, mentre l'alba su Gaza piange la sua città. Saranno quante le stelle, da ogni parte del mondo, a convergere in combora col cuore a babordo. Oggi a Gaza e domani tutta l'umanità.
Well, there you go, an upbeat Italian rapper.
Yeah, Murubutu with his song Sumud about the global Sumud flotilla that it's on its way to Gaza at the moment as we speak.
Oh, no, if you've seen any of the Instagram photos, it's actually massive.
It's huge. And it's been under attack. Two confirmed attacks now. One, the first one was in Tunisian waters and it was targeting the main ship, which is called the family ship, which is... where Yasmin Akar, which is the who is the main organizer, convener of the Global Sumud Flotilla, was on. And as you remember, if you've seen any of the videos of the Italian dock workers who said if they were to be attacked, that there would not one nail would pass through the ports for Israel. That's funny. It rhymes in English.
But not in Italian. No. what's the nail in
chiodo. Non passa un chiodo. And so they've called a general strike. So the 22nd of September, there will be a general strike in Italy. The three main unions that cover the dock workers, as well as a lot of other workers, in conjunction with student unions, who have gone back to occupy some of the biggest universities around Italy, are preparing for a general nationwide strike, which is incredibly inspiring. So this moment in Italian history, I mean, it's special to me because you have this nexus of big major artists, major cultural icons supporting the Sumud, like the Sumud Flotilla, as well as the unions, as well as mayors, and as well as students.
It's like a line in the sand sort of thing going on. We didn't mention this in our headlines, but it sort of brings to mind because on Thursday was September the 11th, and it was the anniversary of the US and Australia on its coattails, destruction of the Allende government, socialist government in...
the democratically elected
government in Chile, which led to a whole lot of refugees from Chile coming to Australia and to other countries. And it's just been said that Bolsonaro... In Brazil, the fascist leader there has just been found guilty of attempting assassination of Lula, the present democratically elected president of Brazil, and has been given 27 years. He's already in his 70s, so it's assumed he'll be at house arrest. But the point is that it's an actual... landmark decision for democracy in South America.
Yeah.
And it sort of coincides with these two important historical events, effectively.
Especially we went to watch 3CR chairperson Pilar organized, along with Phil F., an event on this Thursday, a documentary called Mother Country, about the director of that documentary bringing his parents back to, or visiting with his parents, the political history that his parents experienced under dictatorship. And it
grotesque.
Grotesque. We recommend watching the movie and the great interview that you did on Showreel with the director.
Yeah, Pablo. We're going to now move on to listen. If you want to be truly scared, this is a presentation done by Mercedes Zanka. Mercedes is part of Friday Rave on 3CR. That's a Friday at 5 o'clock. Mercedes was giving a speech at the Eco-Socialism Conference, which was last weekend. And what she's telling us is that AUKUS was never about submarines.
I guess, yeah, when we're talking about AUKUS, I think that it's really important, and I guess that this is something that we've kind of been saying since the beginning of AUKUS, but now is a pretty much well-known fact amongst military defence circles and analyst spaces and increasingly in the general public, is that AUKUS was never about submarines. It was never about the submarines. We were never going to get them. Australia's a defence industrial base was never equipped to build them. And it was impossible to equip Australia's industrial base to domestically manufacture them within the timeframe that they were set. Over the last 4 years, the stated plan went downhill from building our own submarines to buying some of the existing US or UK fleet to getting new submarines purpose-built and based on the UK Astute-class, badged as AUKUS-class, to then buying new Virginia-class subs from the US and later building our own AUKUS-class vessels. So from the get-go in 2021, it's just kind of shifted and changed and shifted and changed. Now, the US has recently undertaken a review of AUKUS, and that is the latest stage of reviewing the submarine proposal. But I think in terms of thinking about why we're actually never going to get them, the US, if the US are building them, the US currently are so behind in their own building the submarines for their naval submarines for their own navy, that currently they're producing about 1.4 a year, and in order to be able to do that, they need about 2.5. So they're so far behind, and this is why the review is undertaking, and this is why we're seeing such a shift in the US wanting to increase and bolster its defence industrial base, because it does not have the capability to produce enough of its weapons and stuff for its own military. So the submarines were always the perfect ploy, because the part of AUKUS and the preconditions necessary, the legislative preconditions that the US, and less so the UK, but that it was required of Australia in order for the US to feel safe enough to provide Australia with nuclear subs, is what AUKUS is about. And those preconditions are already in place, and that is what AUKUS Pillar 2 is. So the submarines were a perfect ploy that kept attention and focused on what the submarines are and what that needs, but there is a raft of legislation that has already been introduced as a part of AUKUS Pillar 2 that has shifted our whole defence, trade and legislative framework and research and information sharing. I'll just quickly go through a list of what the legislation and what it means and that has already been brought in as a part of AUKUS. So increased US military rotations and the embedding of troops within each other's militaries, that's that interoperability and interchangeability. The establishment of a new nuclear oversight body, which answers directly to the Australian Department of Defence, and that's as part of the Naval Nuclear Safety Propulsion Bill, which also there's a part of that that just says we're going to take nuclear waste from any of the three AUKUS partner subs as well. So that's just as a little side note. And there's a company called Talus Holdings, which also, up just near, I think about 135K south of Alice Springs, has now got a sand mine. There at the moment have a guy called Gus McLaughlin, who's a former Major General of the Australian military, is now a senior advisor to undertake that project of taking dangerous materials for Talus Holdings site in, and that's a part of the AUKUS Pact. So what I'm going to touch on in a bit more detail in a moment is the license-free trading environment for arms and dual-use technologies with the US and the UK. The hosting of non-conventional weapons, such as nuclear and biological weapons for the US at Australian military bases. The development of new submarine bases for use by US and UK nuclear armed power and powered submarines. The classification of Australia as a domestic source for military and dual-use goods, including such basic things as rare earth and other primary products, domestic source for the US. So Australia is now considered a domestic source for the US for anything on the defence and strategic goods list. The co-development and production of weapons, including munitions that the US could export to anywhere without need for Australian approval. So as part of the US and Australian Defence Cooperation Treaty, a really important part of that is in terms of trade and export, there is a particular term in there that is called re-export. And so basically anything that goes from Australia to the US, which is now in a license-free environment, the US can re-export that anywhere with no oversight that is necessary from the Australian government. The Australian government doesn't even need to know, and it would be a national security issue if they did, allegedly. You know, this is a really important part of why what we saw happen last weekend and last Sunday in the increasing march of fascism and how it's been going for a long time, that this is not a separate issue to something like AUKUS, because under AUKUS there is a, and I can't even believe what it's called, but under the Defence Trade Control Amendment Bill, there is now a, this is what they call it, a whitelisted list of companies that it's okay to have research and people conducting research and shared and not considered a foreign entity. And so when you have a look at that list of 29 countries, 31 including the US and the UK, it's like the embedded racial discrimination within that policy in terms of who is allowed to share information, who you can sell and supply goods to, is embedded within the AUKUS framework. So I think when we're thinking about the racial discrimination and fascism on the streets, it's like this is not the militarization and research sharing and research in universities and the government policy, which we know in this country is fascistic and colonial, but it's not separate to, and so when we're thinking about, if they're talking about anti-immigration protests or imprisonment for foreign entities, that's always going to play in. And when, of course, it's in the government's interest to have groups that are marching on the street like we saw last weekend, because when they bring in these policies, it's not going to get pushback because people are going to support it, even it might not be for necessarily something that we at first see it. So that's the creation of laws based on nationalities and ethnicities around university research and particular military production. Massive fines in terms of imprisonment for even unknowingly sharing information on military and dual-use technology and research and production. And that's for people from any of the other countries not included in that list of 31 countries. I think the fine is like $750,000 and 10 years imprisonment. Increased cooperation between the intelligence agencies of the US, UK and Australia, and the formation of a subgroup, a new subgroup of the Five Eyes Intelligence Network, a new space tracking radar system, which is called the Deep Space Advanced Radar Capability, will be developed at a new base near Exmouth. And increased launches of satellites, including military satellites from new Australian launch facilities. So as part of AUKUS, that's all new legislation that has come in and is now passed in under the Australian government under AUKUS. While most of it's, the talk has been about submarines. We're never gonna get the submarines. That's what it's actually about. One of those lists of policies is the Defence Trade Control Amendment Bill. What this is it creates a license-free environment. I guess in when we're talking about defence and the build-up of industrial capability, and like you mentioned, Malcolm Turnbull in 2018 of Australia wanting to become one of the top 10 exporters of weapons, we also have to think about, like, it's always been for export. And there is a false dichotomy created within Australian defence circles and government circles. And I guess there's, like, one of those camps is that the Australian Defence Force and Australian defence policy needs to remain wedded to the US war machine and the defence primes like Lockheed Martin, like Thales, Boeing, BAE Systems. And in the other camp, there's Australian policy should more focus on building a sovereign defence industrial capability and move away from the primes and more to sovereign-based, smaller SMEs that are doing research, design and manufacture domestically. There's this kind of like push and pull between, but it is a false dichotomy because despite existing seemingly in different camps, they both serve the interests of global capital. And they're still backed by the same lobby groups and private investment for whoever team that they're playing for. They're just wanting to and chasing better returns for the people who are funding them. So the Defence Trade Control Amendment Bill was brought into force in the 1st of September 2024. It's a licence-free environment between the US, the UK and Australia. So if there's anything that is being exported, you don't even need to get an export permit for it. Any of those countries are exempt from the legislation that I had before. And so Australia's export permit framework, it's pretty much like if you put in an export permit for anything on the defence and strategic goods list, I think last year they had an estimated value of $100 billion worth of exports, which is self-reported by the companies themselves and not given any oversight or checked by the Department of Defence. But that was about $100 billion worth of exports. And I think in the total of all of the exports that were approved, I think they denied 11 of them. of $100 billion. So it's pretty much you put in an export, and they don't actually track real exports. So once you have the permit, it kind of, it's like, it might be, you know, it might be for this much. But between the US and the UK, it's license free. And I think what part of that re-transfer or re-export means in when we think about a company like Lockheed Martin or the Williamtown base, which is a F-35 maintenance, repair and overhaul, which is where those parts have been sent to from Sydney to Tel Aviv for the F-35s, is that there's this, some of you might be familiar with the concept of a bonded warehouse, and so they kind of exist in this space that it might be near an airport or something. It's kind of like that, like the zone in passport control, I guess, that sort of like once you cross out of customs, you're sort of technically already in another area. So it doesn't necessarily mean that the exports under the license-free environment ever leave. They can be exported from here, but they're technically in the US. So they sort of pass through that export regime, and then they can exist, whether it be a day, whether it be a couple of years, or just sit there and waiting until they're required, and technically be in the US, and Australia would not even know whether they're being exported or not, because as far as the Australian government is concerned, they've already been exported, even though they actually haven't left the continent. And so these policies have been put through by the Australian government with bipartisan support from AUKUS, which was brought in by the Morrison government, has been supported. And these are all of the raft of policies, and it's not about submarines, that have been brought in and that make it easier for the government to say, we don't export arms to Israel, because they have had bipartisan support and put through a raft of legislation that means that Australian manufactured and made and designed weapons are ending up being used and bombing Palestinians in Gaza and the West Bank, but the Australian government might not even know, because they have pushed through so much legislation that allows that to happen, that it gives them no oversight, that they can go, oh, well, we didn't know. That's why the R-400 can end up there. That's why those F-35 parts. And I mean, we know that the RAF sent F-35 parts, but they're like, oh, it's a weapons component. Yeah, the Australian government and both sides of government have pushed for this raft of legislation that has created a legislative environment in which Australian manufactured parts and components which are being used in genocide, or which are then in a forced posture. I do think it's also just, if I want to just add one more thing, it's like the recent designation of that IRGC is a terrorist organisation is also a forced posture. If the US goes to war with Iran now, we've got to go. Australia is going to go, because it's designated the IRGC as terrorist organisation. So it's the fight against terrorism. Mm-hmm. So I guess like when we're thinking about AUKUS now, is like all of that legislation is already in place. So if we were to abandon AUKUS now, all of that legislation has already been passed. It's already in place. Mm-hmm. Australia is already a domestic source. I'm not saying we don't. Or we don't push for that, but I think we have to think about how we want to fight this, because critical minerals will be the next really big thing as a domestic source, and because obviously China, in a posturing against China has a monopoly on rare earths and critical minerals, and so Australia has reserves on stolen Aboriginal land, of course, but that will be the next thing in terms of trying to shift China as having the monopoly on that market, because they're necessary for weapons. But it's, at the end of the day, it's all about how, depending on, you know, which side of the camp of sovereign defence capability or in remaining wedded to the US, it's all about accumulating capital into fewer hands. And it's all about investment of return. And we just got to keep figuring out how to fuck these bastards up.
Public Forum. Cancel AUKUS, no war. Sunday, the 21st of September at 2:30 p.m. at the Victorian Trades Hall. AUKUS threatens our security, peace and independence. It is turning Australia into a major US military base and launching pad for US-led war in the region. The Australian government is spending more than $368 billion over the next 30 years on AUKUS submarines. Instead of funding social services, climate action, and sovereign manufacturing industries and long-term jobs, what alternatives are there in a global climate of big powers, military build-up, and growing tensions? Come to the forum. Cancel AUKUS No War, 21st September, 2:30 p.m. at Victorian Trades Hall to hear more about AUKUS and how we can organise to stop it. The event will also be live streamed via the Facebook page No AUKUS Coalition Victoria, a 3CR supporter.
3CR Community Radio, giving voice to the community since 1976.
A weak solidarity brekkie team listener when it got off to a discouraging start. P1 Monday morning kicker, Albing Uzi seeks to reset ties with business. Then big headline, Supremo's call to get behind climate plan. Big Supremo Anthony Albing Uzi will call for corporate Trubulawazi to back the socialist climate change agenda. Oh God, I thought, more bad news for the environment. Anthony was addressing the Trubulawazi Business Profits Council's annual meeting, attempting, the Trubulawazi Capitalist Review reported on behalf of the filthy rich, to reset a fraught relationship with big business. See, he needs a reset because he's so upset the caring business class with outrageous caring business class relations changes, which, as the Capitalist Review pointed out, had disadvantaged poor caring employers. Industry-wide bargaining, same work, same pay, cracking down on labour hire rorts, even criticising the supermarket duopoly for, quote, inappropriate profiting, as if, oh, it's an endless litany of national injury against the great creators of wealth. Even proposals that might, at their extreme, force the poor dears to pay some tax. On which the Business Profits Council made it clear to Anthony that a proposed tax on corporate cash flows affecting the 500 or so largest companies is not on, will stifle already anemic business investment. The tax, it said, was uncompetitive and ill-conceived. We need to close down that conversation as quickly as possible. How could the government be so naive, so myopic, not to see the anti-Trubulawazi consequences of trying to squeeze some taxes from the filthy rich? Anemic business investment, that's what. Although a fuller explanation of how paying tax is uncompetitive mightn't have hurt. And after creating all that damage, Anthony wants to stop polluting. Well, support the government's pollution address climate change policy. What a cheek. Between the socialist transition through fossil approval policy and the caring business class, the environment's certainly in safe hands. Yet, we commented last week how cruel these long-haired, commie, greeny, wooden working and iron environmentalists can be. That Bob Brown throwing outrageous barbs at our Minister for Environmental Pollution, Murray Swat's the environment. This week, bloody Greenpeace stepped in, claiming BCE, the Business Profits Council, BCE stands for, wait for it, Blocking Climate Action. The Business Profits Council report paves the way for a weak target, more new gas and would see climate pollution soar, it raved. How dare they attack Anthony's chosen partner in saving the planet? And as if the poor supermarket duopoly hasn't got enough to worry about, with ludicrous suggestions they are ripping off the federal court has hit them with a $1 billion bill for underpaying workers. This after Kills Value was already paid 31 mil after being sprung and Woolworths Trillions a whopping 486 mil. Being sprung an unfair slight, because it's all inadvertent, of course, which is a hell of a lot of inadvertent. Those awards must be so complicated, mustn't they, that they totally bemuse the duopoly accountants, whom we assume are not totally financial and grammatical illiterates. The attacks get worse. The out-of-control federal court again. The poor big Trubulawazi, BHP, bloody huge profits, bloody huge polluter, forced to pay its in-house labour hire workers the same pay as its other workers just because they're all doing the same job. A 30 million pay rise. Doesn't the federal court have any concern for the BHP shareholders? And we know there must be a simple reason, but until bloody huge explains it, we're left to believe, as we've said a number of times, that the only explanation for the 300 mil is that bloody huge has been ripping up its workers, its labour hire workers, to the tune of, well, obviously, 300 mil. Amazing, given that obvious difficulty in comprehending awards, that caring employers never manage to overpay workers inadvertently. One would think on the law of averages, but no. And huge construction conglomerates were also accused of ripping off workers, assaulting and intimidating an evil union official, underpayments, sham contracting, a long list so obviously the socialists will immediately take them over and appoint an administrator to run them. Thank goodness through all this a true socialist emerges. That unflinching champion of workers, former ACTU Secretary Little Billy Kiltbem, proud player in giving us economic rationalism, announcing his resignation from his post-ACTU working class struggle after 26 years as a director of Lynn Foxy, run by his very, very, very close filthy rich of the filthy rich friend, Lindsay Foxy. I just saw it doing the same thing I've always believed in, trying to improve the living standards of ordinary true blue Aussies. I have a broad view of being a socialist, in that you don't leave people behind, but in order to produce the best result, you can work with good companies, you can use profitability to improve living standards. Oh, little Billy, spoken like a true socialist. Good companies, surely an oxymoron, and profitability are the very stuff of socialism. Still, they explain a fair bit about Little Billy, albeit nothing we didn't know. And he was spot on in one area, a broad view of being a socialist, a not-so-broad view of what's required to make a great society, make America great again, provided to US of the UN of the US of the world, make America great again youth by Charlie Karkdit, who told his deep-thinking audience gun deaths were worth it as the price of liberty, of freedom, of saving the US from abortion and trans threats and evil unions and anti-Zion protesters, a litany of threats to liberty, freedom and democracy, and, well, therefore, Charlie can't complain. Not that he can, now that he's carked it. His hero, big supremo Donald Trump or the Porter, cried, radical left political violence, the biggest radical left political violence ever, ever. Unlike non-radical right political violence, which is pro-liberty, freedom and democracy, essential to the freedoms threatened by the violent commie left. Back here, the parliamentary democratic process also suffered a devastating blow Wednesday when that champion of multicultural harmony, Jacinta Arde-Thomasina Price, paid the price, was shuffled from her junior shadowy assistant ministry to the back bench, which is bound to shut her up, just because in attacking the socialists for something they hadn't done, silly Jacinta, when there's so much we can attack them for, hadn't done, insulted the second biggest population on the planet. Smart political move. And Jacinta knows hate means never having to say you're sorry. The great US old pioneers knew how to handle their Indian problem, she bemoaned, displaying her unswerving commitment to the cause of First Peoples. On which, how the terra nullius non-land non-people must wish they had adopted a no-proper-papers, queue-jumping, illegal boat people policy 227 years ago. Then the Lord Rupert of Wapping Sin wouldn't have been forced to run a double-page spread warning us about this treaty the state socialists have struck with the terra nullius non-land non-people. Sweeping powers as critics demand the deal should be put to a referendum. So dire that in a double-page spread at subsequent spreads, the poor old Wapping Sin couldn't find one person who thought it might be a good idea. Why these terra nullius non-land non-people could start acting like they own the place. Reported last week, the AN0FU bank accidentally informed staff they were for the chop. Sorry, sadly having to be let go when some idiot pressed the wrong button and, oops, return your computer appeared on the workers' screens. Well, this week, new bank supremo Nuno Mates I'm Not said 3,500 jobs will go, which he said had nothing to do with profit. They've announced a record profit and nothing to do with AI or technology. In fact, nothing to do with anything, apparently. That's not quite true, Nuno corrected us. Then what? Fear! But in an inspired human relations move described by the Trubler Aussie Capitalist Review as the Hunger Games IN04U style, some threatened sadly let go can save their jobs. See, for every 10 remaining positions, they invite about 30 workers to apply, of whom 20 will then hand in their computers. And the bank's general counsel, whose job we assume is not under threat, said, "Our objective is to treat everyone with dignity and respect." Not sure we need to comment on that. Yet, despite all that sincerity, the bloody evil union, as usual, did comment, questioning the dignity and respect bit. But Nuno took a break from sadly having to let go to address a big business Asia summit this week, lecturing us that Trubler Aussie needs to posit itself as a beacon for talent, presumably exercising that talent down at the local Centrelink office. Oh, and an update from our international desk. As we record this, the latest in the conga line of French PM, Sébastien Lecornu, appointed on Wednesday, was still ensconced after a record 3 days in the job. Now, I can hear you saying, listener, why doesn't the week that was cover the big stories of the week? But really, we can't compete with the Lord Rupert of Wapping Sin. Okay, it's a big story, a footballer swearing at a telejournalist, warranting a double-page spread right up front in the hard news pages, but it does such a thorough job that there's nothing left for us to say. How can we compete with the hard news content of the News Very Limited Empire? No rip-offs here, but interesting. Football in Brisbane tonight, no Victorian team, and airfares one way to Brisbane at $169. Last night, Hawthorne playing in Adelaide, much shorter trip, airfares between $800 and $1,000. Interesting, that. There must be a simple explanation. Always a simple explanation from Zion when it exercises its Yahweh-given right to bomb and slaughter and destruct anywhere. Qatar added to a long list. Terrorists. Terrorists just everywhere. Especially, of course, the non-land, non-people terrorist it slaughters, destroys, genocides, starves, who obviously see the Zion train killers and their train killer merchandise not as terrorists these 77 years, but as liberators. And finally, top marks to the US for commemorating 9/11, finally admitting its role, along with our very own ASIS, in delivering years of pinch-of-shit terror to the Chilean people on that date in 1973. Boys, it's a good living. Yeah.
Wow. If you weren't awake, you are now. That was great. What was that?
New Vietnam by Civic. So a local band.
Yeah, it's great. It's almost a band that plays music that it always loved. You know, like that's the music they want to hear, so they're going to make it.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And yeah, just great to showcase real talent from here.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
That, says something.
All right, so we're coming up to the last part of the program, and you're on Solidarity Breakfast with Annie and Tobiah, and you've got a report from the Northern Territory. We're doing a left turn now.
Yeah, it's important to keep in mind what is happening in the Northern Territory, because when, as we talk about extrajudicial stuff, criminal war crimes, human rights abuses, it's important to note that they're right here, especially as today at 11, we're going to be at Flinders Street in support of First Nations people here whose sacred site, especially the Wurundjeri sacred site of Camp Sovereignty, was under attack by the Nazis. So it's important that everyone...
Last Sunday, not so long ago.
Not so long ago. It's important that everyone gets down as much as they can, as well as there are also on the streets today reactionary right-wing conspiracy theorists as well at Parliament. So it's important that the people take back the streets.
And not to mention the cops, because it's a designated area.
The entire world's a designated area. So we'll hear... from Natalie Hunter, Richard Fijo, and Ned Hargraves, who's the grandfather of Kumanjay Walker. And this has all this audio has been provided by the amazing people at Saltwater Radio in the Northern Territory. You can listen to the on the Community Radio Plus app on 4CCC FM, their radio is.
Children that are incarcerated in hell holes across the Northern Territory by the CLP. We have more black bodies in jails than ever before, and it's just getting higher and higher. And if you look at each day, there's about 200 people in the justice system attending courts. So I don't know where the hell they're putting these people. Most of those people are in the watch houses that are a disgusting state of affairs based around the breaches of human rights, treatments of people. We're coming today with a group called Justice Not Jails. And Justice Not Jails is a community group that was formed in reference to the CLP and their racist comments on their first sittings was based around incarcerating Aboriginal children as young as 10 years old. Shame, shame, I say, yes, thank you. And then each week, as you pick up the paper or on Facebook, there's a change in the new changes of the reforms that the CLP is doing. And everything is based around blacks across the Northern Territory. And this is why we are here today, to address our issues and tell this government who's sitting in power today that it's not on. Our first caller I'm calling up today, he's an amazing male, a traditional man from the Larrakia country. He's worked hard to where he is today, and that's Dr. Richard Fijo. Thank you very much. He'll do a welcome and then he'll have something to say. Thank you, Richard.
So good afternoon, everyone. My name is Dr. Richard Fijo. I'm a Larrakia man from Darwin. Firstly, I want to acknowledge my older brother sitting back there. I see you. My son, I want to acknowledge all Larrakia people in attendance, the First Nations people in attendance, and really importantly, our supporters. It's a shame that I don't get to scream my head off like I really want to tonight, because I'm absolutely furious. When we welcome people to country, and anyone that's seen me welcome the people to country, I welcome everyone. And that's the place that we set. That is the tone that we set. But we have more and more Aboriginal people coming to Darwin and places like that and facing these unjust laws, these unnecessary laws. The CLP government is not welcome to Larrakia country. We don't want you, and the sooner we replace you, the better. I would like to remind people of our history of what happened to Black Australia with the savagery in our history of what happened to our people. Not by our people, but to our people. Everyone knows about our Black history right across Australia, including right here on Larrakia country, and it is still happening today. When we have decision makers in power making bad decisions for that, we all know the impacts it has, from arresting 10-year-old children, meaning that they can't get meaningful jobs in the future, preventing their leadership bursts. And it's a whole thing to actually stop us from actually being and standing up who we are. I want all those kids in prison and all their families to know you are welcome to Larrakia country, just not CLP. And I want to remind the CLP what you're doing, acting like we're savages. You're the savages. What is happening today at your hand is modern savagery, and there's nothing less of that. It is un-Australian. It is unnecessary. We've had time and time again, the whole last 12 months that you've been in power, the opportunity has come to meet the people who know, the specialists, and you turned them down at every turn because you think you know what's best for us. You don't know what's best for us because you never walked in our shoes. And now I'm getting angry because it's not right for the First Nations people to be treated this way. And it is unfair. And we don't want it. We don't want our kids filling the prisons when they could be filling the education systems. We look at these signs here, no room for racism. And what they're actually doing is opening the door to racism. And we just need to look at what happened on the weekend. We have more and more of these unwanted people, this rot in our society, coming to our country, speaking up and rallying and trying to say that they have an authority to keep out people from other countries and places. They're immigrants themselves. Illegal immigrants on stolen land. And that's what they need to remember. Know your damn place. We are the Larrakia people and we have been here forever. And when the CLP is gone, we'll still be here. And if they get into power, we'll still be opposing them as well. When you're gone, we'll still be right here on these steps, saying these same speeches, because we're not going anywhere. For all the supporters, welcome to Larrakia country. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dr. Richard, for your voice. Very strong, the Larrakia man. Our next speaker, he needs no introduction. He's like a movie star at the moment. He's been around the country, photos everywhere, Facebook, and he's got a lot to say. And his name is Mr. Ned, and he's from Yindamoo. Give him a warm welcome. I'll hold the speaker for you, brother.
If I can...
Hello, brothers and sisters. Larrakia people, thank you. Thank you so much to be here. My name is Ned Hargrave Jambajamba from Yindamoo, and I'm a Walpri man, and I speak for my Walpri and right across the Central Australia today, because those communities don't hear enough. They don't hear, they don't get the message. And this is why we are left out. Our people are left out on certain occasions. Because Gadia things, when I say Gadia, I say white people. That's what I mean, Gadia. And when I say Yapa, it means people like Yapa here are living today. We are. But I want to start off saying, you know, I want to say to the Larrigay people, thank you very much for having me here and being with you and sharing with you, and acknowledge all the ones passed away and we're today are doing these things for the people that has gone. I want to say thank you so much. And I'm with you people, with Yapa. Thank you so much to having me here. There are, I stand here proud with our countrymen, Yapa people today. I stand here with you to face what we have, what is happening to us, what is happening to our land, what is happening to our children. It is disgrace. It is disgrace. This government needs to fuck off. And I mean that. I mean it. Because they don't know this land. They don't know our people. They don't know our children. They don't know. We don't need you people here. You think you're doing the right thing? You're doing a perfect job. No, you're not. You're killing our children. And my grandson, my jaja, was strangled at Colt in Alice Springs. I don't know why they did it, not why. They could have just been nice with him, you know, just be friendly with him. But they took his life for one bottle of Coke. A bottle of Coke. It's a shame job. Yes. Sorry, I'm gonna take a little bit long, but it's worthwhile me telling you what's need. We need supporters like your people today are amazing people today, that you stand with us. We don't want any more of our young people. We don't want any of our young people to lose their life through police, because they are not doing their job right. Because they love themselves on what they're doing. If you have the guts, when you kill a person, Bambro, it's a payment. We don't say payback, Bambro, meaning justice. You know, we say to people, when you kill someone, you must done and face your punishment of Bambro. This is what these Gadiah don't ever think about. This is what they don't think about. Because they don't know the law, they don't know our culture, our law that stands within our country. In this place, in Australia. Mando, I'm saying this to you. We want you to stand down, Stephen Ace. We want you
two, stand down, Stephen Ace. He is not suitable for his job. We want you, Martin Dole, to stand him down. Because we're not happy what he has done. And we are not happy, Dole, with you. You're not doing your job properly. So we want you to stand up and help us. You talk about the law, you talk about your laws and your demands. Well, we want you to do it. I want to finish up saying this. I, like you, all the supporters today to help us stand second time when we come back on October 14 with the force. We do not want our children to be castrated by white people. Because we got values, culture, law, tukuruba, kuruware, we got it. Whereas you haven't got it. So I want to say thank you so much for having me here and giving me this opportunity today. Thank you.
And for those who are unaware, the people that he's calling for the resignation of the Commissioner of Police in the Northern Territory.
Martin Dole, the Police Commissioner, and Stephen Ace was the police officer on duty. Or not on duty.
He wasn't actually. Even on, not duty. On duty. Oh, my God. Oh, my goodness. That's it. That's a wrap for Solidarity Breakfast this morning, and thank you very much to Saltwater Radio for that contribution for bringing us our Melbourne station into the understanding of what's going in on a broader Australian-wide context.
And we'll see you on the streets, Flinders Street, 11 a.m. today.
Au revoir.
Everywhere we walk upon in this world, one indigenous group or another has once lived there before for thousands and thousands of years. One of the most intricate and respectful ways to inhabit that place. We need to remember that.
You're on indigenous land, original clans. Since beginning of man, countless years out on this land. Living so grand, aligned to commands. Intrinsic alarm, never disband. 60,000 plus. Following law before this light of hand. Through the seasons and sacred plants. Injurious storms for many lives spent. From the desert down to the clay pit. Tropics and mountaintops, swamps and oceans. Sanctified beaches, no equivalent. Swept with the tide, deeply advanced. Warriors pose so poised in a stance. Outer's wisdom, truth never by chance. Sorcerers, elixirs and transcendence. Standing in love across every expanse. Message sublime, it's in the hands. Reflects from beauty from all that expands. Infused with the magic, majestic and grand. Meridian ma, thought of cool land. No more body, call it the band. Koko, yalanji, bangarang. Yong yo, pai, mirana, brungam. Yota, yota, unwarang. Where is it you standing, man? Whose land you standing on? Know the history, know the facts. This indigenous land that you are on. Indigenous land is where you stand. Indigenous land is where you be. Indigenous land, it always was. Indigenous land, always will be. Indigenous land is where you stand. Indigenous land is where you be. Indigenous land, it always was. Indigenous land, always will be. Lest we forget the frontier wars and the genocide blueprint that does live on. Deaths in custody is seasonal, more prolific than ever forced by big ghosts. Still they gallivant and they roll bust. Children again and again stolen. In the blink of an eye, they get with us and then they are gone. We still amidst all these storms, 230 years gone. Village in scorn, culture ignored. Fictions insidious as dawn. All of our sacredness shaken and sworn. All the while on indigenous land, we are living out that lies upon. Does your mind realize the song? As it posts in subliminal dawn. From ancestors on the rise on. To do not. not belong. A perpetual cycle of wrongs. It's been glorious, we will time bomb. Project all of our kingdoms. Still here, still live on. We still countless original, limitless indigenous nations.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.